Another day to live through. Better get started. Well, what are you waiting for?
Run for your life! Go on, get out of here, run for your life!
The United States Supreme Court has described it as dirt for dirt's sake.
There's not just like some whiny guy up there crying about how his girlfriend left him, you know, he's gonna slit his wrist. It's a rock and roll show. Oh, it's about happiness and all right, maybe this is some not so happy shit.
Drink up, man. We got 2 6-packs to kill.
Sort of like, you know, communal, let's all get together and have a big orgy feeling.
Never in the history of the world have the merchants of obscenity, the teachers of unnatural sex acts, had available to them the modern facilities for disseminating this filth.
Remember what I said. I'm gonna kill you.
Excite me!
Hello and good afternoon. This is Boris. I'm here with Snake Alley at GaragePunk.com. You know, some people say that the slicing of flesh is not a thing of beauty. Their minds have been twisted. So pick up your knife, kiddies, and go into your dark, dark bedroom, and I'll be in later to bite your navel.
Catastrophe, host of One Cup of Coffee and a Cigarette on the GaragePunk.com podcast. Right now, you're listening to Bob and Jeff on the wonderful Snake Alley.
Turn on, Governor.
Oh, yeah, turn on, Governor. Turn on your iPod. Turn on your computer. Anyway, I guess you already did because you downloaded. This is Snake Alley, episode 8 of the new season here, and we just heard Blood Zombie from VD, and that's from an album called Further, I don't know exactly what label it is on. It's provided courtesy of our guest musical director tonight, Copper.
Bob, Jeff, how the hell are you? I am just tickled pink. Can you tell?
We're broadcasting from Underground Overland. And as usual, I'm joined by my guest, Jeff Reinhardt. How you doing there, Jeff?
Oh, real good, Bob. Real good. Glad to be here again today. I can't tell you how much I look forward to each and every session.
Yep, I hear you there, man. Anyway, I had just mic there a little bit. Anyway, we're listening to Turn On from the Ricochets back in 1965. And just here's a little break. Listen to this.
Jolly good show, chaps.
You know who that is, Jeff?
I'm drawing a blank, Bob. Let me know.
Anyway, that is Harry Nielsen.
That's Harry?
Yep, that's Harry, playing with the Ricochets out of Tucson, 1965.
You know, I actually had one of Harry's albums. I believe it was an early 70s album entitled A Touch of Schmielsen.
Yes, I think it was, and it had that great song, You're Breaking My Heart. You're tearing me apart, so blank you. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I believe he also sang the old hit, Always.
Yeah, he sang a lot of stuff, Without You.
He was great.
Yeah, he was pretty good. He wrote Three Dog Night songs as well.
Actually,
he
also
was part of that songwriting team up there with Carole King and Neil Diamond and all that up there in New York.
He actually also did a comedy horror film towards the early 74, 75, or 73, I believe, called Son of Dracula.
Okay. Think so. I think I remember that. Anyway, we're looking at some movies today, aren't we?
We certainly are. We have got here what I would say an unusual combination. And I'm going to let Bob fill you in a little bit on the ingredients.
Well, today's theme is arts and entertainment and elevator shoes. And our everybody in these flicks have to wear elevator shoes. And they are wearing elevator shoes. But our first installment is the arts section of the arts and entertainment. And what it is it's Roger Corman. Yes, Roger Corman once again with A Bucket of Blood from 1959. And this stars Dick Miller, Anthony Carbone, and Ed Nelson in a great role. And why don't you tell me a little bit about it, Jeff?
Well, actually, for the most part, the actors in this Roger Corman film, Bucket of Blood, actually were of, I guess you could call it, Mr. Corman's generally used actor group at AIP.
The main character played by Dick Miller is Walter Paisley, and he's this nerdish waiter at this bohemian coffee house. And he's very jealous of the talent that hangs around there, the phony talent, and he decides to become an artist.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, and look for a youthful, and I do mean youthful, Bert Convy, who I believe verified for me this, Bob, if I'm not incorrect or right. He actually got killed by Dick Miller in the film, and I think it was, what, the first real human victim?
Yep, that was his first human victim. And that's what we're going to get to, is that he becomes a sculptor by killing living things, coating them in plaster, and they look amazingly real, and he's the big hit of this hip art community. Not exactly, don't know where it's at. I guess it's supposed to be in Greenwich Village or Height to Ashbury or something like that. But anyway, let's go ahead and take a look at it here.
Yes, Cat, yes. If you want to know how beatniks live, William and me will show you. We'll introduce you to some wild ones. You may even discover an artist of your own.
And how much is that going to cost us?
Oh, Walter, you look awful pale. What'd you have to eat tonight?
I had a salami sandwich, Mrs. Swicker.
Oh, if you were my son, why don't you let me fix you a nice bowl of soup? Won't take but a minute.
Well, it's okay. I can fix myself something. Besides, I got something important to do.
Oh, say, Walter, did you see anything of Frankie tonight when you went out?
I didn't see him at all.
But, well, if you do, tell him I got a nice, fresh piece of halibut for him.
Tell him that? I mean, do you think he'll understand? He's only a cat.
Good night, Walter.
what's the matter, Frankie? How'd you get yourself stuck in a wall? Wait a minute, I'll get you out.
Oh, come look at this letter.
Well, where'd you get that, auction?
I made it.
You made that?
I said I did, didn't I?
Walter was very good.
Honest?
Honest.
What's it called?
Dead Cat?
Dead Cat? That's its name?
Sure.
Well, it sure looks dead enough.
That master sculptor is in our midst. He's none other than Walter Paisley, our very own busboy, whose hands of genius have been carrying away the empty cups of your frustrations. Mark well this lad. His is the silent voice of creation. Within the dark, rich soil of humility, he blossoms as the hope of our nearly sterile century.
Beautiful, Bradshaw.
Bring me an espresso, Walter.
Walter, you've done something to me. Something deep down inside of my prana.
I have.
Oh, Walter, I want to be with you. You're creative. You've got a hot light bulb glowing inside of you, and I want to be warmed by it.
Gee, that's nice of you, Naolia.
Walter, take me away from here. Take me away to some cool blue place. Gas me.
I can't. I gotta go home.
Oh, then I'll go home with you.
Oh, no, Mrs. Swickard wouldn't like that. She's my landlady.
Isn't there anything I can do for you?
I don't think so, Naolia.
Oh, Walter, I can't let you just split like this. I've got to do something. I've got to contribute.
Okay, Walter, who's your connection?
Connection?
Yeah, connection. Who do you score from? Where do you buy your horse?
Horse?
Horse, junk, white stuff, heroin.
Is that what that is? I never seen any of that before. I always thought that was expensive.
Yeah, Walter, that can be real expensive.
Gee, well, wasn't that nice of Naolia to give me that expensive horse?
Walter.
Huh?
Police officer.
Oh, you're like an undercover man.
You're under arrest, Walter.
Under arrest for what?
Possession of narcotics.
Who, me? What are you talking about?
Walter, I got you cold. Now, you just come along quietly.
I didn't do nothing. And Naolia give me those. I didn't ask her for it.
Okay.
I didn't even know what was
all
in
right.
That.
All right, you can tell them that downtown. Now, let's go.
I ain't going no place with you.
Walter, do I have to point this at you?
You're going to shoot me. No, don't shoot
Walter,
me.
Walter, just relax.
No, you're going to shoot
now,
me.
Just relax.
No, don't shoot
just
me.
Shut up, Walter.
No, you're going to shoot me. Don't shoot.
Walter, what are you going to make next? A dog, maybe. Or a bird. How about a few dozen cockroaches from your room?
Hey, man, why don't you make an elephant?
I got a new one.
Great. What is it?
It's a full-length, life-size figure.
Crazy. What is it called?
Murdered Man.
When do we get to see it?
Oh, anytime.
Hey, that's a pretty far-out name for a statue.
I saw a statue once. It was called The Third Time Phyllis Saw Me, She Exploded.
Now, what kind of a statue was that?
I don't know. It was made out of driftwood and dipped in fluoric acid. Very wild.
Pretty freaky beatniks in there, you know? And just a little trivia here about Bucket of Blood. At the time of the original release, theater owners were... There was this promotion in the newspaper's movie section that if you brought in a bucket of blood, you got a free movie admission. And I don't know, it seems like this thing would be shown just at the drive-in, so... You'd be careful driving with that bucket of blood, you know, to the drive-in, so... I don't know if that really worked out too much.
You know, speaking of the beatnik setting, like you just mentioned a few moments ago, Bob, you must remember that this movie was made during the high popularity of Dobie Gillis, whose one of its main characters was Bob Denver as Maynard G. Krebs.
Now, no way that you're relating that, you know, Maynard G. Krebs
to
this.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just saying.
I mean,
the beatnik setting.
That you mean the stupid beatnik setting?
Yes, well, we are.
These guys are pretty stupid. I really like the There's a bunch of clips that we played in there that are very interesting. And the one line about how Walter Paisley knows his anatomy, that's apparently a nod to the similar themed House of Wax.
That's right.
1953, which used the same line about Vincent Price's character. Of course, a year later, Roger Corman started working with Vincent Price.
That's right.
Why don't you go on and use it?
So, anyway, this is a good flick to watch. It is not on archive.org. It is in the public domain. It's available on various collections, usually like at least two movies on one DVD.
Oh, and also I'd like to mention the very provocative softcore nudity that Mr. Corman used in this movie when Paisley murders a
starlet,
yes, and
a model.
It just made you want to look for more.
Yeah, like most of these movies did. And that's why I think that it was mostly pointed towards the drive-in, but there were these little sleazy movie houses that, you know, where the town wasn't large enough to have a drive-in.
Oh, I will say this. It's like back
which is pretty small.
In when Roger Corman was only maybe 4 or 5 years into producing and directing, even back then he had a click following.
What do you mean, click following?
People that actually went to see the movie, not just to see a movie, but that Roger Corman directed.
Okay, good deal. Especially, they knew it had to be good.
Listen, especially critics.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's Bucket of Blood, like I was going to tell you, that it's not up there on archive.org, but it's available in various collections. I found mine on 50 movie pack chill classics up on eBay for like $20. They're in the public domain. Plenty of movies are. You can just do a search. Actually, you could probably get this movie on a 16 millimeter print if you went out and looked for it. It's out there on the web.
That's right.
Anyway, Bucket of Blood, Roger Corman, 1959. We're going to move on to a little bit of music here to move us into our next movie we're going to look at. And it's a dandy. So, here you go. A little bit of Bela Lugosi meets the Brooklyn Gorilla. I'll give that away, and here's some tunes that set the mood for you.
Transylvania.
I'm Dr. Zabor. Welcome to my crib joint.
Go, 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 go
go, 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 gorilla. Yeah, that was, let's see who that was. That was Go, Go, Gorilla by the Riviera Playboys before we heard The Deviants with Bela Lugosi. I think that's a ripoff of Bauhaus, Bela Lugosi's Dead or something. Not sure about it. What do you think about them tunes there, Jeff? You liked the second one especially, didn't you?
Actually, the Lugosi must have actually, for me, hit home because I've always been a very, very ardently, very excited fan of Bela Lugosi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like you couldn't tell that we like Bela Lugosi around here. We've only reviewed a bunch of his movies, and this one's one that's probably lost in history. I didn't know about this thing till about a year ago, and I found it at Walmart, actually, in the dollar DVDs. Never heard of it before that. Never ever heard of it.
I remember the first time I saw it, I was only like 5 years old, and I had seen bits and pieces of Lugosi's Dracula from 31, but from his aged appearance here, which he actually was very old, I didn't even know it was him.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about this movie without giving too much away. There's some parts we're going to let you figure out on your own here. And this thing was filmed in 1952. It's called Bela Lugosi Meets a Brooklyn Gorilla.
Yeah.
And it was filmed in 5 days on a budget of $50,000. In Martin Landau's research for his role as Bela Lugosi and Tim Burton's Ed Wood, Martin Landau, beers are getting to me now, late in the episode, Martin Landau had watched this movie, and he said it actually made Planet 9 from Outer Space look like Gone with the Wind.
Oh, yes, yes.
So this is a bad movie in the weirdest way. You don't understand if it's a parody, you don't understand if it's just bad, or what the hell is going on
no,
here.
No, I should explain the reason Bela, Mr. Lugosi, I think, was taking, perhaps the best word to put it, subpar movies roles was that a year earlier he did an English film by the name of, actually it had three titles, My Son the Vampire, Old Mother Riley Meets a Vampire, and Vampires Over London. And this was meant to be a comedy because also it was directed by John Gilling, who later went on to work for Hammer Pictures in England. I believe his most prolific was that potboiler, Plague of the Zombies.
Anyway, he is there conducting experiments, as usually Bela Lugosi does.
And get this, the outfit he's got on, which is the white lab coat and the hand-tied necktie, you'll swear, think about this, if he didn't have on the same exact outfit for the never-ending, in Z-movie popularity, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh yeah, it's definitely, this is definitely a stinker, and he hates doing this, you can see it, and we're not going to talk about it anymore. We're really psyched up because we were just wondering when we're going to get around to reviewing this real piece of shit. That's all I can call it. But, you know, it's a gem, and it's just, you'll figure out why we're so excited.
Let me say this. All I can say is Bela did his best to contain a straight face in this.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's pretty pissed off throughout the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like he's pretty well hammered up.
Was inhaling a bottle of hooch at a table.
Well, I do know, and I don't mean for this to be offending or anything to Mr. Lugosi, but...
Oh, you're worried about his son, George, coming after you, aren't
you? His son's an attorney.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go ahead and take a little peek at this piece. 1960? Is it? 1952.
Yes.
1952. Bela Lugosi meets a Brooklyn gorilla.
Where are we? What place is this?
This is the most southern fringe of the Zamboanga group. The island of Cola Cola.
Cola Cola?
Sounds like a commercial for some bubble water.
How did we get here?
Some of our men found you lying in the jungle and carried you here.
Yeah, what are we on for carrying charges? Get it, carrying charges, funny wine? Let's lamp it up here, lady. Oh.
Come in.
How did you get lost in the jungle?
Well, we were on our way to do a show for the boys in Guam. We were in a plane high over the Pacific. Sammy goes to look for the powder room, and he couldn't find it. I went there to show him. I walked through the wrong door. Like a dopey follows me.
Yeah, lucky thing we had on parachutes.
Well, there we were, lost in a vast wilderness. We lived on wild berries and raw fish.
Which is much better than the raw fish living on us.
You have nothing to worry about. My father, the chief, will see that you're well cared for.
Me, Chief Rockus, king of this island.
Well, gee, you sure look super, Chief. Super, Chief, get
Shh. Hiya, Chief. I'm Duke Mitchell. This is my partner, Sammy Petrillo.
You know Mitchell and Petrillo, songs, dances, and snappy patter. Have tuxedo, we'll travel. And not this far.
Welcome to our island. We are honored. Our house is yours.
Yeah, well, remind me to get some new wallpaper in here, will you?
Shh. Bungo, bungo. Papeo kolihau and poi poi.
Climb by. This looks like Death not only took a holiday, but he got a hangover from taking it. Oh, this looks like Sing Sing. I gotta get out of here.
What are you worried about?
Worried? I ain't worried. Just wish I was back in Brooklyn playing the Lois Pitkin, that's all.
Good morning, Chula.
Morning.
Tell Dr. Zabor I am here, and I bring two white visitors.
I tell Master.
Dr. Zabor's a very brilliant man.
Brilliant man, huh? Anybody who live in a creep joint like this must be a moronic idiot.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Zabor. Welcome to my creep joint.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry, Mr. Idiot. I didn't mean to call you creep joint a creep joint.
I think nothing of it.
Doctor, I would like you to meet my friends.
Yes?
Hi, Doc. I'm Duke Mitchell. It's my partner, Sammy Petrillo. We were on our way to do a thing. Don't I know you from someplace?
I don't think so.
Ain't this the fellow who goes around with the hands and the faces, biting people on the neck and wearing capes?
You're crazy.
Watch out for bats!
Wait a minute, I'll prove it to you, watch. Dr. Zabor?
Yes?
Would you do me a favor?
What is it?
Make a face.
What?
Thanks. See? What did I tell you? Now go over and apologize.
I ain't gonna do it.
Come on, you embarrassed me. Go over and apologize. Come on.
Dr. Zabor?
Yes?
What do you go around scaring little children for?
What are you doing? What's the matter with you? Don't mind him, Doc. He thinks you're the guy that goes around biting little kids on the neck. You know what I mean? It's him.
Doctor, my friends fell out of a plane and landed on the island. They would like to get back to civilization. I told them you could help them.
That's possible.
Thank you, Doctor.
It may take several days to make arrangements. In the meantime, please, accept my hospitality. Allow me to furnish you with suitable clothes.
Gee, thanks, Doc. But no capes, huh?
Oh. Chula!
Well, folks, if that isn't a crime, I don't know what is. And this movie did end up in the criminal courts. Actually, a little duo there. No, that wasn't Martin Lewis. Who was that, Jeff?
I believe one of the names of them was Sammy, and that was the gentleman who was nefariously similar in appearance and voice to Mr. Jerry Lewis.
Sammy Petrillo. And Duke Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Duke Mitchell being the cool dude playing the straight guy as Dino would have. And, of course, Sammy Petrillo. It is so scary.
And
how
look
close.
And look for the fact that they never shoot these suckers below the ankle.
Yep, because they're wearing elevator shoes.
That's right, Bob.
Both of them.
That's right.
Both of them. They're shorter than Dick Miller.
I mean, these guys.
Shorter than Alan Ladd.
Guys,
shorter
these,
than Ronnie James
you,
Dio.
These guys are worse than Clayton Moore.
Well, I don't know. Well, of course they are.
I mean.
Well, I'm just, these guys have no acting talent whatsoever other than Sammy Petrillo does it dead on.
I mean, my God.
I don't believe how close it is that he sounds like
Jerry
Lewis.
He looks like him. He moves like him. He sounds like him. I'm sure this movie got the real Mr. Lewis peeved.
Oh, it sure did. Actually, it ended up in court, and Duke Mitchell, who plays the straight man who would be Dean Martin suing, but Dean Martin was being sued. It was just the entity of the Martin Lewis thing, and the movie's horrible. And I mean, I don't want to go too much of what the trial was. I want to just talk about the movie. It's bad whenever you know there's gorillas in a movie. Men in gorilla suits, it's going to be bad. But there's two men in gorilla suits here. I want to point out there is one redeeming factor. The two men that were the workhorses, the journeymen of the men in the gorilla suits in the 40s and 50s was, of course, Ray Crash Corrigan, which we went into that before when we were looking at Raymond Burr's little debacle
Bride
there.
Of the Gorilla.
Bride of the Gorilla.
Yeah.
We looked at that before. And actually, Ray Calvert was in that.
I'm trying
in the
to
gorilla
remember
suit.
On the...
Hey, hold on.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, I wanted to point out, the gorilla guys, this is probably the only movie where both the gorilla suits are in the same movie, and it's both the gorilla guys, Ray Crash Corrigan, and also Steve Calvert, which Steve Calvert, that wasn't his real name, but he took his last name from being, from, he worked at a Sunset Strip Club, and he was the bartender, and Calvert, he took it from Calvert Whiskey. So he became Steve Calvert. Ray Crash Corrigan used to hang out with him, and he sold him his two gorilla suits. And time again, they'd have to swap him off because Ray Crash Corrigan didn't actually retire from movies. He'd go out and do circuses, and they'd have to swap out these gorilla suits. So this movie, a big deal, I guess. I don't know where I'm going with this, but both gorilla guys from the 40s and 50s are in this one. If there's anything redeeming other than that, Bela Lugosi's pissed off. I don't know if he's pissed off because he's stuck in this Martin Lewis blatant ripoff.
I know. It's just terrible because, I mean, as soon as this potboiler gets into the first 5 or 10 minutes, you think to yourself, what in the hell have I got myself into?
No, you're asking, is this really happening?
Right, because you know, it's like...
Man, these guys are just like... It's like when somebody would shoot somebody in public.
Yeah.
You're caught red-handed here, man. And it went to court and everything. But, you know, it's good. And unfortunately, it is not up on archive.org yet. Although it should be. And I don't know if somebody just hasn't got a printout there, but I picked the thing up for a buck at Walmart. And believe me, nobody owns the rights to this fucker. And I was looking at, in the beginning, there's a little disclaimer. The FBI warning thing.
Yeah.
And it's a joke. It says you can't show this at wrestling matches, schools, drilling rigs, prisons.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a joke. So anyway, it is in the public domain. You can get this on 16mm if you want.
I'm trying to remember, Bob. Who directed it?
Let's see. Let's take a look here. Brief musical interlude. Let's see. Looks like directed by... William Bodine.
Oh, William. You know what they called him? Oh, his nickname. William One Shot Bodine. If he didn't get it in the first take, hell with it. That's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, and Tim Ryan also wrote part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, like, Desi and Lucy came onto the set of this thing, and all kinds of people thought this was such a big deal, you know. It's
like
this great satirical thing.
Yeah.
Man, it's just turned out to be... It's unbelievable when you watch it. It's unbelievably bad. All the natives.
Oh,
there's no real natives.
Listen,
everybody's white.
The gal who plays the native round-bottom wench, I suppose is the best way to put it, the heifer, goes after Sammy.
Her name is Charlita?
I guess.
Run for your life!
Goes after Sammy, and I didn't realize this until I watched about 10 minutes of it. It is the same gal that appeared in one of the last Three Stooges short when they had Joe Besser on there as the third stooge. This gal...
Stop that! Faggot Joe, right?
Yeah.
That's what I call him.
Yeah, anyway, this gal who was after Sammy in the movie also portrayed the part of the gal in that Three Stooges short that sang "The Heat Is On." And the thing is that mess with this lady because she definitely will knock your lights out.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry you can't download this archive.org. Like any of you are even going up there and downloading the movies that we're telling you about, you're probably finding them other places. And this one, if you look around for it, you'll get it for a buck if you look real hard. If not, you get part of a collection. And what do you say, Jeff? We'll go ahead and move in a little bit of music. And we'll be back after that.
Sounds great, Bob.
Hi. Leon, toss me a brew.
Shook the can, moron.
I'll tell you about another can that shook up. 400 miles of sugar.
And loving every minute of it.
I give me this, baby.
So where do you suppose the rest of those roving eyes are, huh?
It looks like we're the first ones here.
Dream on. Ain't none of them large butts going to be making this trip. We're it.
Bullshit. Merle's right. The days when we had 200 bikers rolling down I-70 on a road trip are gone.
Yeah, man. Most of those mothers have traded their Harleys and leathers in for Beamers and pinstripe suits. Face it, we're an anachronism.
The hell I am. What's that mean, anachronism?
It means we're not cool anymore, dude.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for episode 8 of Snake Alley. Thanks, everybody, for joining in, downloading, and enjoying. And thank you, Copper, for being the guest musical programmer for today. If you want to be the musical or guest musical programmer, just send me an email, a message through garagepunk.com. You can find me there. If you found this podcast, well, you can find a way to email me. And if you're a fan or if you have any kind of thing you want to include in programming, we're open for it. Anyway, thanks again, Copper.
All right, I got to get the hell out of here, guys.
What you have learned, Van Helsing, I suggest you leave England immediately.
Hey, what's up, gang? I've been listening to GaragePunk.com on my iPod here. It's pretty cool. I like it. What? You don't think so? You think it sucks? Well, fuck you then.